Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Hell on earth is how a UN official recently described the situation in Sudan's North Darfur region, where ferocious fighting continues to escalate. And for over a year now, war has been raging in Sudan. Violence, famine, disease. And the UN now say that displacement is affecting nearly 9 million people. Since conflict broke out between the Sudanese military and paramilitary rapid support forces in April of 2023, over 14,000 people have reportedly been killed. Well, to discuss this, I'm joined by Africa correspondent with Sky News, Yusra El-Bahar, and Dr. Walt Kilroy, who's a lecturer in international relations at DCU. Yusra, I'll start with you. Will you describe to us the situation currently in Sudan?
You have conflict raging between two of the largest armed factions in the country, the army, the National Army, the Sudanese Armed Forces, and the militia that they armed and created during the Darfur genocide of the early 2000s. Now, since then, that militia has grown in size, has been a border force that's collaborated with the EU on migration, has sent mercenaries to fight in Yemen for the UAE and Saudi, and has been legitimized over the years and has become a paramilitary force called the Rapid Support Forces. So it's gone from being the Janjaweed, which are synonymous with ethnic cleansing and genocide in Darfur, to now being the second largest armed faction in the country. Now, post the 2019 revolution in Sudan, there was a power vacuum after the 30-year dictator, military dictator Omar al-Bashir was ousted, and the head of the army became the de facto president, and the head of the RSF became his VP. Now, over the years of that transition, they teamed up to carry out a coup on October 25th, 2021, that derailed the youth-led revolution, and then a growing power struggle between them started to come to the surface. So April 15th, 2023, last year, we saw that power struggle explode into what is now over a year-long armed conflict mm-hmm. that has consumed the country. It started in the capital city. It really evolved into a national war very, very quickly. And Darfur, where the RSF are from, has suffered from extreme violence as the RSF has tried to fight for territorial control, not just in the center, but in their land of origin.
And Yusra, the humanitarian toll of all of this is immense, as I attempted to outline there in the introduction. But will you describe what it's like for those who have been caught up in the violence and in the impacts of it, malnutrition, displacement and so on?
Of course. I mean, we were there in the very early days of the war, and we, you know, there was a lot of shock and disbelief, and we watched it just unravel into what is now being called by the UN the biggest humanitarian crisis in the world. You've got extreme hunger. The country's on the edge of famine that would impact around a million people. Now, that would be worse than the Ethiopian famine that we saw in the 80s. And diseases, malaria, cholera, you know, the diseases that you expect in cramped places, IDP camps filled with people, but schools, you know, schools have been closed for over a year since April 15th of last year, and they're now being used as shelter for women and children. Women are training, they're learning how to use guns, they're working on their self-defense because they have been casualties of sexual violence throughout this war. It's just honestly, it's gone from bad to extremely horrific in over the course of mm-hmm. of the war, and I think we're at the point of no return, to be honest.
Well, Walt, we spoke about this in the recent past, and at that time there wasn't any progress being made on any sort of peace talks. Has anything happened in the intervening period?
Unfortunately, not, Claire. The situation, as Yusra was saying, is really extreme. It is the most serious displacement, with 9 million people displaced and half of the population, 25 million people, in serious need. But there's just no will at the moment on either side of these two elite groups to actually go into talks. There have been talks held, it's 13 months since this broke out, and talks have been held from time to time. But really, there's never been any political will, any real interest. So this is two elite groups that are fighting, but it is the civilian population that's suffering. And the real worry is that in Western Sudan, in Darfur, there are increasingly ethnic aspects to the targeting. So instead of civilians being kind of caught up in looting and crossfire, we're now seeing civilians being targeted. People being killed, not because they're perceived as a threat or it's some kind of accident, but people killed because of who they are. And this really is something where we're wondering, are we looking at another genocide?
And Yusra, can we attribute the fact that there's no meaningful talks in sight to a lack of international effort to intervene here?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there is no will, as Dr. Kilroy said, around there being a successful ceasefire, because every, you know, one side always wants to get the one up on the other side, and they worry that a ceasefire will give the other side a leg up. But I think in terms of mediation, we've seen really lackluster mediation come from the international community led by the UN, as well as the Troika nations, as well as the EU, from 2019, from the revolution, when young people were saying, we don't want military rule, we don't want the Janjaweed, the RSF, to be in the center after what we've seen happen in Darfur. And they were ignored time and time again. So I think there is this feeling that we have just been left to deal with our own issues without successful intervention, but also that we were told consistently that we just had to learn to live with it. And so a lot of young people that I interviewed back during the revolution felt like their dream of democracy, of equality, was consistently being shut down as unrealistic. And I think that is really, you know, that kind of cynicism that comes from this kind of mediation means that we were always meant to tolerate the violence of today.
So, Walt, why, in your view, has this situation remained quite low on the international community's agenda?
Yeah, it really is extraordinary that we're not talking about this more. And I'm not saying that, you know, we should pay less attention to what's happening in Gaza or Ukraine. But, like, you know, we can pay attention to more than one thing at a time. In a way, it suffers from not being in anybody's backyard. It's not seen as strategically important, even though it has the capacity to really destabilize. Well, it's already destabilized the whole region, but that could have really serious consequences. But it really hasn't been on the agenda. It is, however, on the agenda for a number of Gulf states who are involved in rivalry and backing different sides. And this is where I think diplomatic pressure does need to be brought to bear immediately. The United Arab Emirates, they deny it, but I mean, the evidence is incontrovertible. They've been arming and providing funds to the really, really brutal rapid support forces who are one side of the equation. Egypt and Iran are on the other side, are backing the state army. And I think without pressure on them, the key actors, the two sides in this elite battle, won't have the political will to actually engage in genuine talks, because at the end of the day, it's civilians that are suffering.
And Yusra, there have been some calls for a peacekeeping mission to be sent to Darfur. Some of the human rights organisations have been saying that that might help. Is that anywhere on the agenda?
Well, Claire, I think that there is a difference between what's being called for by people in Khartoum, who have a lot of paranoia around UN intervention and international and external intervention, and the calls that are coming from Darfur around peacekeeping, because Darfur was home to a UN peacekeeping mission, UNAMID, for many years that followed the genocide in the early 2000s. And the withdrawal of UNAMID in 2020, I mean, it was a drawdown process that started in 2018, but the withdrawal did see an escalation in intercommunal clashes. And I'll be honest, I think the conflict in the early 2000s benefited from a lot more accountability. There were observation missions, journalists were allowed into Darfur. To see it today, I mean, we're only seeing probably I've been told 1% of what's happening every day. So I think a peacekeeping mission would be much welcomed. Observation missions, there really needs to be a forcing of their hand. I think that there's been a really lackluster and almost timid approach by the UN and by other international organizations who need to start addressing the RSF's actions head on. And we're seeing more of that coming from the US envoy, from the UN, kind of directly calling the RSF out for their acts of for their atrocities that they've been committing against civilians.
We will certainly keep in touch with both of you and keep a close eye on this developing situation in Sudan. For now, though, Africa correspondent for Sky News, Yusra El Bahar, and Dr. Wald Kilroy from DCU, thank you both for joining us. Back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.